Welcome into Locked On Nets. I am your host, Josh Bass, and on today's show, Marcus and I will recap the Nets' disappointing loss to the Orlando Magic and discuss which Net is prepared to make the biggest splash at the NBA's All-Star Weekend. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets here again. As I mentioned, I'm your host, Josh Bass. And Locked On Nets is your main source of Nets-centric content in the form of mini podcast episodes, 20 to 30 minutes. Maybe if we're feeling frisky, we go longer, discussing all the analysis that comes with our beloved Brooklyn Nets. And joining me, as always, it's my boy, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, how you doing on this Super Bowl Sunday?
I'm good, Josh. Speaking of bite-sized episodes, I'm excited for some bite-sized foods from your very own father, Barry. Very, very excited. Looking forward to that. But we got to talk some basketball before we get to football.
Yeah. Absolutely. Basketball always comes first. Ball is life. Unfortunately for the Brooklyn Nets, they had a disappointing loss last night. They're now 2-3 since Spencer Dinwiddie went down, and his presence was sorely missed against the Orlando Magic as the Nets fell to the Magic 102-89 on the road in Orlando. This is an Orlando team that they've beaten a couple times so far in the last month or so. But really, the Nets just couldn't get into a rhythm, Marcus. They turned it over 18 times, shot a terrible 36% from the field, and finishing with less than 90 points, that's pretty bad from this Nets team.
Yeah, they played well in the second quarter, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Other than that, it was tough to find any rhythm on offense, and they weren't great defensively either. I mean, you and I were talking about it a little bit before we started recording, but the Magic's length seemed to really be a problem for Brooklyn, and that was also a problem going back to the Celtics game, where it just seemed like they look smaller without Dinwiddie there. And maybe it's the having to play Napier more with Russell and kind of smaller lineups, and Rondé hasn't really been playing well since he came back. He doesn't look as explosive, and maybe Krux is getting tired, I don't know, but guys don't seem to be finishing and kind of exploding with the same intensity that they were.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you made a good point. Even losing Jared Dudley, even though he's not the most athletic guy, he does have some size and some heft to him, and now you're replacing him with Travion Graham at the four primarily. But yeah, I mean, Orlando's length really bothered the Nets. I mean, they start their wing duo of Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac, with guys like Wesley Iwundu, Cam Birch coming off the bench. These are all really long guys. And I was telling you, Marcus, I'm shocked that the Magic only finished with 8 blocks, because it seemed like they basically had 8 in the first quarter. Rhodey Kurucz, I think, got blocked maybe 3 or 4 times in the first quarter alone. Rondé got blocked a lot. Damari Carroll. It seemed like the Nets guys were almost just shooting it. As soon as the layup would leave their hand, it would get swatted down by whichever long Magic defender was in the area.
Yeah, and I think part of that, maybe part of the low block number, is that once you get blocked a couple times, you're almost a little just like trying to get it off regardless. And then there's like a lot of altered shots probably as a result that don't necessarily show up in the box score. But the Magic seemed like they were fully prepared, and maybe that's also part of playing this team. This is now the third time in like the last month or so, like you mentioned. So maybe Orlando kind of knew what to expect. You know, Rhodey has kind of caught a lot of teams by surprise, so maybe they were able to game plan for him more. But still disappointing. I think that this was a game, and this is a team that the Nets probably should beat at this point, even without Dinwiddie and with all the injuries they've suffered, but Orlando kind of gave it to them here in this one.
Yeah, it was frustrating. I think D'Angelo Russell was really the only consistent Net, finished with 23 points on 8 of 17 shooting. I think he didn't have his best game, was a bit sloppy with the ball, had 5 turnovers, and could have had a couple more. So we'll look to see if he tightens that up. And really, besides Shabazz Napier having a nice run in the second quarter where he hit 3 threes, including a really nice buzzer beater, I mean, Jared Allen had no impact on the game whatsoever. Joe Harris struggled with his shot. Kurucz, as you mentioned, really struggled. His last 5 games, he's shooting 26.5% from the field, 12% on threes. I mean, has he hit the rookie wall? Because he's taken his percentages are about half of what they were in the games leading up to that.
Yeah, I think they mentioned in the broadcast that his three-point percentage for the season is down to like 30, which is really not great.
Yeah,
especially because it looks so good a lot
it
of the time coming
good.
Out of his hand. But yeah, I mean, I would have wanted more from like a Damari Carroll. He's been playing really well lately, and he wasn't like bad in this game, but just to kind of step up and be that second or third scorer, I guess, for this team without Dinwiddie. But yeah, Russell was good. Not a lot of like complaints about him anymore. He's kind of like reached a point where he's pretty much always like 20 and 7.
Yeah, steady state.
Yeah, and Ed Davis was solid again. I mean, he was a monster on the offensive glass and on the defensive glass. But yeah, there just no one really like had a great game. Like Russell was good, and everyone else was kind of either fine in Napier's case or bad in pretty much everyone else's case.
Yeah, and the Nets just didn't, I don't know, the energy wasn't there. They had a nice second quarter, but kind of once the Orlando took that 8 to 10 point lead, the Nets could get it to maybe like 6 one or two times, but never any closer than that. And then obviously the Kenny Atkinson empties the bench with Mitchell Creek and Alan Williams at the end of the game. Yeah, they're just lacking a consistent guy to add to D'Angelo Russell and Shabazz Napier that has at least the potential of getting 20 points. I mean, Rondé, I've lost all hope in him. I think he just looks really bad, completely out of control, and has lost a lot of his athleticism. Damari Carroll is someone that has had a nice season for the Nets and can play, can get to that level every once in a while, but he's not someone you can rely on. And listen, if the Nets aren't really that competitive in a game against the Magic, it's concerning because we don't know how long Spencer Dinwiddie is going to be out. And the Nets are more conservative with injuries. So, you know, right now the Nets have about a 4.5 game cushion on Detroit, who's the 9 seed. But I definitely will see, I think we'll see that tightening in the weeks to come, unless Dinwiddie can make a remarkable recovery, or maybe the Nets make a trade for someone that can give D'Angelo Russell a bit of help.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because I remember when the Dinwiddie injury first happened, I kind of thought that they would have enough to skate by. And I mean, they have been 2-3, so it's not like been a disaster, but they just haven't looked good in the three losses. And I think I'm slightly drifting towards where you were initially, where it's like, I think they could probably use another ball handler via trade. I'm not sure who that is, but someone with some length to kind of play with Russell and kind of do what Dinwiddie was doing, at least in December.
Yeah, just like any sort of wing would kind of help them, or a guard as well. I mean, Terrence Ross had a terrible game in this one, 3 of 14, but he is someone that can get his shot off and can get really hot and win you a game or two. So even someone in that mold, I'm not saying specifically Terrence Ross, but the Nets just need more firepower, because Joe Harris right now, he's had a great season and he's still going to be a very solid starter. But it's hard for him to make that leap. Jared Allen struggling with consistency. Kurucs is in a big slump. So you're left with kind of D'Angelo Russell, and then every so often Shabazz Napier can carry you for a couple minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it comes down to. I mean, you know what you're getting from Russell at this point, like we said, and then you're just kind of waiting on someone else to pop up. And if someone else does, then the Nets have a decent to good chance of winning. But if no one else does, like tonight, I mean, they couldn't even crack 90 points, which is disappointing, like we said. And they shot 26% from three, 36% from the field. So nothing was really going down, and a lot of that was due to the Magic's length.
Yep, not the best game, but we will take a quick break here, and we'll talk about some better days. The win against Chicago Bulls, the very competitive game against the Spurs, and then we'll also preview what you should expect from the Nets in All-Star Weekend. All that coming up on Locked On Nets. Segment 2 here on Locked On Nets. Marcus, let's quickly kind of touch on some big thoughts from the Chicago Bulls win and the tough loss to the San Antonio Spurs, which I thought was actually an encouraging sign for this Nets team. But first, let's talk about the kind of the bat situation in the AT&T Center.
Yeah, that was while we were recording with Chris Herring. So I saw it on Twitter after the fact, but big shouts to the Spurs mascot, who did a great job. Went out there with the net.
Yeah,
it's been happening for like a couple games in a row now. Yeah, they've planned it now, and he's like he's got his thing now. He does his thing. But in that Nets game against the Spurs, I thought that D'Angelo Russell played well again, like we've said pretty much every game for a long time now, and Carroll stepped up, which was big. But then down the stretch, I mean. Did you think that was a foul? I just want to get right into it on Napier at the end.
Yeah, you know, like it's so tough because I think it could have been called a foul, and I understand why the Nets were upset. And I think in the last 2-minute report they said it should have been called a foul. But also, it's the type of thing where if that call went against the Nets, people would be furious. Yeah, it's hard to have it both ways. But I understand why the refs didn't call it. But I also think it could have been called a foul.
Yeah, I think that exact play is something that Napier, I think, picked up from Damian Lillard when he was in Portland, where you kind of curl around the pick and then almost like launch yourself back into the defender's body to try to draw the contact. And I think, honestly, like, if it had happened in the second or third quarter, they might have called a foul. But in that point of the game, that's kind of a cheap one to expect to get at the end of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, no, I think you make a good point about D'Angelo Russell, because even though he didn't shoot the ball particularly well in this game, 10 of 26 from the field, I do think he was very in control of the offense against a disciplined Spurs team, finished the game with 9 assists, and he was doing a nice job getting diming up guys like Joe Harris. Jarrett Allen had a nice game. Damari Carroll made some nice plays as well, and the Nets hung in there against the Spurs, but at the end of the day, they did a nice job containing DeMar DeRozan, only finished with 15 points. Aldridge didn't have as good of a game as he normally would, but Derek White just killed the Nets starting in the first quarter. My boy finished with 26 points. I mean, Derek White is the real deal. He's shooting 50% from the field this year, just really solid offensive player, but he's not someone you can allow to go off for 26. I mean, he's the type of guy the Spurs are trying to rely on to get an efficient 10 to 12, and the Nets just really could not contain him, and that was the big reason that the Spurs pulled this one out.
Yeah, it's interesting, because the Nets don't really have, like, a guy who is, like, a go-to guy in terms of defending point guards. I mean,
or forwards, really.
Well, yeah, but Dinwiddie had kind of, like, at least has the size to contain a lot of those guys, but, I mean, when it's just Russell and Napier, it's kind of tough, size-wise, at least, to try to contain someone, unless you, like, contort the matchups where there's some place where they can hide, and then you can maybe use Graham or Joe Harris maybe even on one of those smaller guys.
Yeah, no, I forgot about Travion. I think he does a nice job. He can kind of guard fours adequately well, and then I think he does a really nice job getting into the kind of the body of twos and threes, but he's not someone that can really guard a quicker point guard. And it's also going to tire him out. And the way that the Nets have been playing recently, going with a shorter rotation, kind of nine guys, steady state, you understand why Travion Graham's not going to get as much of an assignment, and also he isn't the best offensive player, but the Nets really need to figure that out kind of in that next evolution. Who can be that guy that can stop quicker ones and also shooting guards as well? And if Spencer Dinwiddie can do it on a consistent basis with the load he has on offense, that would be great, but it'll be interesting to see what Sean Marks thinks and if that's something that the Nets look to acquire going into next season.
Yeah, I think that the two biggest holes on the Nets, like, right now, this second, with Dinwiddie out, are another guard who can defend and has length, and then also a four who can give, like, literally anything on offense. Because with Rondé, like we've said, he's kind of cratered, and then Graham has been good on defense, but he just doesn't really offer much on offense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the four positions kind of becoming an epidemic here, because even though Jared Dudley wasn't great or anything like that, he could at least space the floor, knock down a three once in a while, and had my favorite move, his great dribble handoff fake. So I'm really missing that.
I'm missing Dudley in a lot of respects. You know, yeah. He's a legend.
But more Twitter time for him, which is nice. And follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Mark gets quickly on the Bulls. We've been kind of trashing Rondé a little bit, but he did have a nice game in this one, finished with 18 points, hit a three. You know, it was kind of the same thing where he was getting his wild shots, but they just happen to go in as opposed to normal?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he was still doing those little, like, turnarounds and some up-and-under moves that, like, his footwork isn't terrible. It's just that, like, I feel like he almost, like, loses track of where he is on the court sometimes, and, like, he'll end up, like, throwing up a shot from under the basket or from further away than he thinks he is, and it's, like, more his touch than his footwork, I would say. But he was decent in this game. And then, like I mentioned in the last pod, I think, where we had, like, kind of just seen the end of this game, the Nets caught that big break with Wayne Seldon stepping out of bounds on the three that would have cut it to two. But yeah, I mean, they played really well offensively, which is something that we haven't seen necessarily in the last game or two. And so that was encouraging. Three 30-point quarters, whereas they had none against the Magic, like we just talked about. So definitely a good win. And that was a win that kind of felt like what's been going on with the Nets lately, where they are the better team and they kind of, even if it's close throughout, they kind of realize it at the end and then put it together and finish it.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if the Nets had, D'Angelo Russell played really well, Napier played well, Rondé had a nice game, but they still needed all those points in that Wayne Seldon mistake. And looking at the Bulls roster, they do have some talented players, but I mean, they're playing Shaq Harrison 25 minutes, Archie Diakono, Blakeney, Jabari Parker went off against the Nets. I mean, the Bulls team that they played, it was horrible. I mean, they don't even have their full complement of guys, and they hung with the Nets. So you know, they won.
They didn't have Cristiano Felicio.
Love Big Cristiano.
Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, dodged a bullet there. So I don't know. What did you make of Jabari? Because I thought he had some nice minutes against the Nets.
Yeah, I have no clue what to make. I like never know if they're gonna play him or not. Like he could either play 30 minutes and score 30 points, or he could play 0 minutes and people are wondering if he's like ever gonna play again. I have no clue what to make of him in general, but obviously he scored well against the Nets. He was super efficient, and not only with his shots but also with his like time on the court. He only played 23 minutes and still put up 22 points and grabbed 9 rebounds. So
yeah, he was
very active. Yeah, I mean, he honestly could be the type of player that would help the Nets, like that four who can like do some stuff on offense like we talked about. I mean, his contract is not something that I would look to acquire, but that type of player, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. If the Bulls want to take crap for him, then we'll do that in a second. But yeah, no, I think, you know, it's tough for Jabari because he does have some skill and can get hot in a second. But he's not just the best fit for the modern NBA game. And just kind of with his pedigree of being a great player at Duke and number two overall pick, he kind of expects to be the main guy wherever he goes. And, you know, he got bumped out of Milwaukee because Giannis was clearly the better player and on a Hall of Fame trajectory. And now on the Bulls, he just doesn't fit well with Lowry and even Wendell Carter, even though Carter's out for the season. So maybe he'll be able to repair his trade value a little bit. But we'll see. You know, these Duke guys are having a renaissance, including Jahlil Okafor. Brandon Ingram had 36 points a couple nights ago. So maybe Jabari will be the next one in that lineage. But let's take a quick break here. And then we will get to talking about our quick two segment, including the Nets' chances of making a splash at All-Star Weekend. Final segment here on Locked On Nets. This is the segment that we call Quick Two, where it really gets it gives Marcus and I the chance to put on our scientist smocks and really become the mad scientists that we've always wanted to be. So, Marcus, first question for you here. The Nets have four participants in All-Star Weekend. Obviously, Rhodey Karutz and Jarrett Allen in the Rising Stars Challenge. Joe Harris, after much nail-biting from the Nets fans, was finally selected to be in the three-point shootout. And then D'Angelo Russell, the big one, being named the All-Star replacement for Victor Oladipo, his first All-Star nod, and a well-deserved one. So, Marcus, question for you is, which Net will make the biggest splash at All-Star Weekend?
Okay, I've been thinking about this. I think I have to eliminate...
Glad to know you're prepared.
Yeah, I put in the work, Josh. I have to eliminate D'Lo off the bat. No offense to him. I think he's the best player that the Nets have going there, obviously, since he's an All-Star. But there's just too much at the actual All-Star game that'll probably overshadow him. Like, LeBron James is in it. I don't know if you've heard of him. Giannis is in it. He's pretty good. Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki got that, like, honorary spot. So
are they
going
to play?
I don't know. I assume they'll play like a couple minutes, maybe like 5 minutes each, but I think it'd be weird if they got the invite and then didn't play.
Yeah.
That's almost like insulting. But so then I think it's kind of like up to the young guys and Joe Harris. And I think I'm going to put my personal, my funds, my capital, I'll throw it at Jared Allen as my pick. I think he's going to either have some massive dunks and or massive blocks in the U.S. versus world game. I'm expecting him to show out. I think that all the other young guys are at least kind of like aware of who he is from all of his highlights this year, and I think that they'll look to get him involved. Like they kind of know what he can do, and they'll be like, oh, this is a guy who can throw down big dunks and block shots, so he's gonna get chances to do that, I think.
Yeah, so the thing about Jared Allen is that I guess I'm also like too close to the Nets, but I've kind of taken a step back into the general NBA sphere and really kind of multiplied my NBA knowledge by 30 times, if you will, just by the whole Twitter stuff. And it's kind of come to the point where I think Jared Allen's like a really recognizable name. Everyone's like, oh, he's the block guy. He's the block and dunk guy.
He is the afro.
He's the afro, exactly. So I feel like he's almost peaked too early. And if Kurutz wasn't doing so poorly in these games leading up to it, I would say that he's someone that could make a splash in terms of right now, really the only people that know him are like Nets fans and like some deep NBA heads, and I think he could have had a lot more broader appeal, like, oh, this is the new Latvian guy, not Davis Bertans, the other one. But I think just with the way with he's struggling, I don't know if we're gonna see that great of a performance from him. But I think Joe Harris is gonna make a splash. I think he's a really good bet to win the three-point shootout. He's a very repeatable delivery. And I don't, you know, I think Steph Curry has always disappointed me a little bit in three-point contests, so I'm expecting the same from both him and Seth. And I think Joe has a really good shot of just drilling some threes and making a name for himself even more than he has since coming to Brooklyn.
Yeah, I feel like Steph Curry won't really, like, take it that seriously. But yeah. Just going back to Kuroks, I could definitely see him doing what Bogdan Bogdanovich did last year, which is, like, mm-hmm. a guy just out of nowhere just comes. And if his three is falling, I think Rhodey could probably, like, replicate that performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And, no, Bogdan Bogdanovich had, like, a coming-out party last year. He's also really good, and I think he's someone that could – did he win MVP last year?
Yeah, at the Rising Stars game.
He's a dark horse to win it again this year, I think.
He's a gunner. I like him.
He is a gunner. I like Bogdan. I liked Bojan, but I like Bogdan even more, I think.
Two of the best Bogdanoviches, I think, that the league has ever seen.
Yes, exactly. So that will be in a couple weeks from now. The All-Star weekend starts February 15th?
Yeah, that's the Friday. Yeah.
That's the Friday. I think I'm missing the Saturday night events to go to an Umphrey's McGee concert. In case anyone listening is going to be at Umphrey's in a couple weeks, but I will catch it all the day after. So that's the first part of quick one or quick two, but you have to have a second part. And that second part is, Marcus, we've seen that the Nets are really struggling right now with any consistency on offense. Their two clearly best creators are Shabazz Napier and D'Angelo Russell. Is there any credence to playing those guys more? I mean, D'Angelo played 32 minutes against Orlando. Shabazz Napier played 26 minutes. Should they look to increase both of those guys' minutes by a couple, meaning that they play more together? What do you think about that?
I think they should actually look to stagger them a little more. I think that it's like really hard for them to play together defensively just because of the size, and even offensively too. Like, especially when you pair them with the non-offensive Rondé or Travion Graham or the struggling offensive Kuroks, just because in this game there were moments where Briscoe and DJ Augustine were like guarding Kuroks, and so then that cleared the way for like Wesley Iwundu or someone to guard D'Lo, and it's just like that's a little bit too much length. Like Iwundu's wingspan is I think like 7'1" or something, which is really tough on D'Lo, who he's able to kind of get to the basket more on like craftiness and head fakes rather than straight line speed.
Yeah,
and so I would like to see them stagger those guys more and kind of play Russell like 32 minutes and then just play the other 15 with Napier and just like almost like a one goes in, one goes out kind of thing. If they're both playing well in the same game, I mean, you could try leaving them in at the same time, but I wouldn't like plan for it. What do you think?
Interesting. I think that's fine. I actually want to see more of Theo the Pincer Pinson playing with D'Lo, because I feel like right now most of his minutes are coming with Napier, and I think D'Lo could actually be could kind of utilize Pinson's athleticism more, get him going out on the break, backdoor cuts, things like that, kind of how he's helped Rhodey Kuroks. And I feel like with Napier, Pinson's just like he's just kind of standing there in the corner and spotting up, and that's not the best part of his game. Even though I don't think he's ready to be a contributor now, I think His real strength would be his athleticism and driving to the basket. So I think having a pure point guard like D'Lo could be an interesting way to get some more out of Pinson. And the Nets certainly need contributions from unlikely areas at this point. So why not at least give it a shot?
Yeah, and his energy and activity would definitely help on defense also. Like even if he's not like in the right position or stance, he's always like diving and going for things.
Right.
So I think he would definitely help the Nets.
Yeah, there. Just dive randomly and hope it's like in Madden and hope it works. He did force a couple turnovers in the third quarter of that Magic game. He had some nice moments. I thought his activity did give the Nets a jolt. So maybe they'll look to put him in more as kind of a defensive specialist and go with a bit smaller, more malleable lineup as opposed to going with guys like Damari or RHJ.
Yeah, for sure. I think that the more kind of versatile and switchy that the Nets can be, the better they'll be defensively.
Yep, and they're playing a versatile and switchy team tomorrow. That's the Milwaukee Bucks. Tough game against the Bucks. They are the number one team in all of the NBA right now, 38-13, and the Nets have really struggled with them basically since Giannis has come in the league, but the Bucks are on fire, have won 9 out of 10. I think it will be tough for the Nets to get a win, but we'll see how they do, and we'll be back in your ears early next week. I think probably Tuesday, we will record a podcast discussing that Bucks game. In the meantime, please rate and review our podcast. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. You can follow Marcus for his very pithy individual tweets at Marcus Barahal. And I am at JM Bass _ if you want to throw me a pity follow. You're more than welcome to. But until next time, we will speak to you.
Bye.